Hello, everybody, and either welcome or welcome back to my podcast. As always, if you do like this, please rate, comment, and subscribe. You can find me on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, SoundCloud, Spotify, and YouTube. Since the current news cycle has just completely and utterly exhausted me, and we're waiting for the next news cycle to come along, I thought that now would be as good a time as any, especially given what's going on in Venezuela and our current U.S. situation with democratic socialist and socialism, and it's somehow becoming popular-ish again. I'm not entirely sure how popular it is outside of our little bubble, but I thought now would be as good a time as any to do this particular episode on the Communist Manifesto, which, yes, I have read more than once, and yeah, I know that the things I do for the sake of trying to be ideologically rigorous and making sure that I know what the other half is thinking, or at least what they're supposed to be thinking, because this is meant to be, first of all, it's not a book per se. Like, it's meant to be, like, I'd say an expanded pamphlet. And the idea was behind the writing of the Communist Manifesto was that this was going to be like codifying what the plan is. Like, here is what communists stand for. Here's what we want. Here's our big ideas. And just finally, like, getting it all down on paper. So I'm not going to read the whole thing to you because, quite frankly, this would be way too long, and that's saying the word bourgeoisie way more times than I ever want to say it in my life. But I do think it bears discussion. So I'm going to go through, and when I had originally read it, I had highlighted certain parts, and I went back and looked at the parts that I highlighted, and it's always interesting to go back over work that you've read before and reread it and look at the points that you thought were important before versus the points you think are important now. Not that my views have particularly changed since I first read this book and highlighted it and annotated it. But it's interesting, and my thoughts on a couple of these points have not evolved. Like, obviously, I am not a communist, but I view some of this stuff in a different light now because I've seen some things now that this might have just made a couple of things make a little more sense. But to kind of back it up for a little bit, obviously, not a communist, libertarian. But I think it's important to try to describe to you guys that my opposition to communism, to socialism, is not a purely academic exercise. I was born in South Florida in 1981, which was roughly a year after the Mariel boat lift. And so obviously I grew up hearing the stories of Fidel's Cuba and seeing refugees leave and float up to Florida in just the most insane shit you've ever seen in your entire life. Like, literally people like floating up the Atlantic Ocean, like 90 miles up the Atlantic Ocean on rubber rafts and on just little boats, like little pleasure boats that are meant to hold 6 people, and there'll be like 20 people on the fucking boat. And just like shit that you cannot begin to imagine. So it's never been a purely academic exercise for me. It's always been one where I've grown up hearing the stories about what went on in Cuba and what went on in Fidel's Cuba and what happened under communism there. So my hatred of communism and socialism is a little more emotionally based than a lot of other people's. And just for the sake of being completely honest with you guys, I want to let you know that. Like, it's not, like I said, it's not a solely academic exercise for me. It's not just pointing out that, like, from an economic perspective, like, this system doesn't work. Like, I know what happened to people who lived under communist rule. Like, I know the evils that were done to people. And so I can't entirely divorce that from my intellectual issues and problems with communism. So, like I said, just being honest. And kind of before we get too far into the actual Communist Manifesto, I'm not, like I said, I'm not going to read the whole thing. I am going to read certain parts because This is something that I don't know how many of the current quote-unquote democratic socialists have actually read the Communist Manifesto. I don't know, but there's an awful lot in there that is interesting, I'll say. But I want to go ahead and start off with, first of all, pointing out that this was written by Karl Marx and Friedrich Engels, which Engels did the actual writing of this, and Karl Marx just kind of provided the ideas. So my first critique of this is that this, even as short as it is, could have been shortened by like half, because, oh my God, Engels is just way too proud of his freaking vocabulary. But in saying that, I have to take a step back and realize that the point of this piece isn't necessarily just to convey ideas, it's to elicit a certain kind of emotional response from the reader, which that's another one of my criticisms of the Communist Manifesto and communism and socialism in general, is it's an emotional-based argument. So looking at it from that perspective, it starts to make sense, the kind of verbiage that Engels used and the amount of words that he used to make the points. It's like, it's not solely to convey information. It's to make you feel a certain sort of way towards a certain segment of the population and to feel a certain way about yourself. So that being said, let's go ahead and just start at the beginning. And at the beginning, I mean the infamous first couple of paragraphs of the Communist Manifesto, which are, "A specter is haunting Europe, the specter of communism. All the powers of old Europe have entered into a holy alliance to exorcise this specter. Pope and Tsar, Metternich and Guizot, French radicals and German police spies. Where is the party in opposition that has not been decried as communistic by its opponents in power? Where the opposition has not hurled back the branding reproach of communism against the more advanced opposition parties, as well as against its reactionary adversaries? Two things result from this fact. 1. Communism is already acknowledged by all European powers to be itself a power. 2. It is high time that communists should openly, in the face of the whole world, publish their views, their aims, their tendencies, and meet this nursery tale of the specter of communism with a manifesto of the party itself. To this end, communists of various nationalities have assembled in London and sketched the following manifesto to be published in the English, French, German, Italian, Flemish, and Danish languages." So, first of all, you can already see what I mean about the writing style here, right? It's a little overblown, but then again, this is meant to elicit a certain kind of response in the person that's hearing it. And to be sure, they state right here that this is meant to be the plan. Like, this is it. Like, this is what communists stand for. Here is our plan. We're going to publish it in all these languages. And from here on out, this is supposed to be the game plan. So pretty much everything in here is meant to be what communism is meant to be. And so, the first section, of course, bourgeois and proletariats. The first sentence in this section: "The history of all hetero existing society is the history of class struggles." So at least right up front, they're being honest about really where this is going. And as historically incorrect as that statement is, that's not, I mean, maybe you can make that argument about modern society, but if you go back, that's not, class struggle has not been what has been the root problem of society ever since people have existed on the planet. So a little bit historically inaccurate there, but let's move forward. Now, obviously, this section deals with the relationship between the bourgeoisie and the proletariats, to which the bourgeoisie, whenever it has gotten the upper hand, has put an end to all feudal, patriarchal, idyllic relations. It has pitilessly torn asunder the motley feudal ties that bound man to his natural superiors, and has left remaining no other nexus between man and man than naked self-interest, than callous cash payment. It has drowned the most heavenly ecstasies of religious fervor, of chivalrous enthusiasm, of Philistine sentiments in the icy water of egotistical calculation. It has resolved personal worth into exchange value, and in place of the numberless, indefensible, chartered freedoms, has set up that single, unconscionable freedom. Free trade. Oh man, that free trade. That's a bitch, ain't it? Man, nobody's ever benefited from that. But, to back it up a little bit, I pointed out this particular paragraph because it seems like Marx and Engels and whoever got together to write this has this bizarre fetish for feudal society, which, just as a brief aside, if you are not familiar with how feudal societies worked, it's essentially what humans kind of arranged themselves in before capitalism took hold. And it's basically that a family owns a plot of land and they're a lord or lady or some kind of nobility. And then there were serfs who were born on the land and who worked the land in the name of the lord or the lady or whoever owned the land. And basically they were servants. And you lived there for your whole life. Like, there was really no upward mobility. There was no way to advance yourself. Like, basically, just generations of people were born onto this land. They worked the land. They died. And that was it. And the Lord was nice enough to provide them shelter and food and stuff like that. But they're basically fucking slaves. Like, that's slavery. That's how slavery has always been understood in this country. So, while they didn't, like, outright buy these people, they're basically, like I said, generations of people who were just born into this life. And there was not any kind of really upward mobility because under feudalism, not only did you have that particular situation of being born into your life and that's it, there were guilds and kind of organizations that protected the higher classes of people so that you couldn't really advance as a person. Like, you couldn't move up the social ladder because it was like, oh no, you have to belong to the guild to be like an architect or a stone worker or a mason or anything of a higher class or like even a merchant or anything like that. Like, you had to be born into that class. And if you weren't born into that class, then you weren't getting into that class. So, needless to say, it was a pretty shit system. And now you can kind of understand why capitalism took hold. Because, of course, under capitalism, you do have the freedom to move up in life. Like, you can reach a higher realm of just financial freedom, of social prestige and stuff like that that was not available to anybody under feudalism. And this is also part of the strain of what you'll see a lot in the Communist Manifesto, and you see this a lot in current populist movements, of this idea of, well, if things just went back to the way they were before, everything would be okay. Which, obviously, no, because if everything was hunky-fucking-dory then we wouldn't have progressed past that point. Like, that's not how progress works. So, there's that. And then, obviously, I mean, I would much rather exchange voluntarily my labor for cash or my labor for somebody else's labor in a completely non-coercive environment, aka actual free trade, than live under any other system. Because obviously, free trade gives you the most amount of choice possible, and neither feudalism nor communism really gives you any kind of choice in those sorts of things. Like, I'm trying to be fair to the original source material because obviously when this was written, communism hadn't really been tried. And now we have the luxury of seeing exactly how this plays out. And under communist rule, it was a lot like under feudalism where you were basically born into your class and it was very, very, very difficult to move up. Like, you had to be willing to do some things under communism to move up the social ladder or move up the financial ladder. And when I say things, I mean some pretty fucking unsavory things. Like, especially if you were a woman, let's just say, I mean, I'm sure everybody can fill in the blanks, but even if you were a man, like, to move up, you had to basically be a backstabbing asshole. And that's how you moved up. And it was just a shit way to live. But obviously back then, I mean, I'm going to say that they didn't know that. I don't know. I don't think anybody really thought this through before they came up with this. But moving on to the next paragraph that I want to highlight. The bourgeoisie cannot exist without constant revolutionizing the instruments of production, and thereby the relations of production, and with them the whole relations of society. Conservation of the old modes of production in unaltered form was, on the contrary, the first condition of existence for all earlier industrial classes. Constant revolutionizing of production, uninterrupted disturbances of all social conditions, everlasting uncertainty and agitation distinguish the bourgeois epoch from all earlier ones. All fixed, fast-frozen relations, with their train of ancient and venerable prejudices and opinions, are swept away. All newly formed ones become antiquated before they can ossify. All that is solid melts in the air. All that is holy is profaned. And man is at least compelled to face with his sober senses his real condition of life and his relations with his kind. Mind you, all that is being presented in here as a negative thing, which, I mean, obviously Schumpeter wasn't around to teach Marx about creative destruction, but again, this goes back to that very populist idea that if things had just stayed the way they were, everybody would be happy. Which, no, but it's that very idea that, and you still see it today, that we need to go back to a world before that. Everybody seems to have this idealized version of the world before that ignores all of the shitty things that were wrong with it that caused us to progress and move forward. Like, I'm starting to see this. I mean, obviously, you've always seen it on the Marxist left, but you're starting to see it a lot on the populist right of this idea that innovation is bad and we need to put the brakes on this because it's costing people jobs and it's quote-unquote destroying society. And it's like, well, you know what? Maybe there is something to be said for evolution of society. And that maybe the thing that you're clinging to isn't really all that fucking great to begin with. And maybe we do need to evolve to get to a better place. Just a thought. Just saying. But again, this is just that idea of wanting to go backwards instead of wanting to go forwards. So skipping a little bit forward, because goddamn, I thought I repeated myself a lot. I ain't got nothing on angles. But moving on to the next paragraph that I want to highlight. Modern industry has converted the little workshop of the patriarchal master into the great factory of industrial capitalists. Masses of laborers crowded into the factory are organized like soldiers. As privates of the industrial army, they are placed under the command of a perfect hierarchy of officers and sergeants. Not only are they slaves of the bourgeois class and of the bourgeois state, and they capitalize state, capital S state, and I will come back to that later. They are daily and hourly enslaved by the machine, by the overlooker, and above all, by the individual bourgeois manufacturer himself. The more openly this despotism proclaims gains to be its end and aim, the more petty, the more hateful, and the more embittering it is. The less the skill and exertion of strength implied in manual labor, in other words, the more modern industry becomes developed, the more is the labor of men superseded by that of women. Differences of age and sex have no longer any distinctive social validity for the working class. All are instruments of labor, more or less expensive to use, according to their age and sex. Again, you see this weird obsession with feudalism these people have of going back to having specialty people who only certain people can do the thing, and not everybody can do the thing, and that industrialization is presented as this just horrible, awful, no good thing, and that maybe we should just go back to just little workshops where people just did the little things for the little area in which they lived. And it's like, again, it's weird. It's fucking weird when you read this. And to go back to my original commentary, can we please with this language? Like, this could have been condensed way further than it actually is. And yeah, I just, it again, it's meant to elicit a certain emotional response. Like, this is made to make you feel like your boss is some kind of oppressive overlord versus this being a voluntary interaction between you and your boss. Like, you go to work, you do your work, you get a paycheck, you go home, whatever. It's not like some kind of exploitative, oppressive situation, but Marx and Engels have a specific reason for portraying it as such, so that you get the idea in your head that you're being oppressed. And so then, of course, you feel a certain way about the people above you. Like, this is meant to elicit a certain reaction. And also, nowhere in here is it mentioned how the working condition would be any different under communism. Like, there's no description. Like, you would think after that particular two paragraphs, actually, there would be a description of, like, but under communism, it would be like blah, blah, blah. No, that's not what happens. So it's like this kind of sleight of hand where it's like, you say this situation is bad, but you don't want to talk about what it would be like under your particular plan. And also, one thing that snuck in here, and there's another part of this manifesto that I will discuss this a little more further in, because it's way more pertinent than this, but this sneaking in of under industrialization, men's labor and women's labor are pretty much equal because it doesn't require as much manual labor as opposed to like agriculture or anything like that. And this is mentioned as a bad thing. Now, for everybody who's ever tried to espouse that communism was about the equality of the sexes, they're kind of telling on themselves right here. You're kind of lying, because you're saying that this industrialization is, in a way, emasculating to men, because now women can do the same work as men. Like, okay, I thought that was the goal under equality, was that women could do the same kind of work than men. Why is this being presented as a bad thing? Just, there's little things in here that let you know that this manifesto was not meant to be read by everybody. It was only meant to be read by a certain group and class of people. And that certain group and class of people did not include women. Like, this was not for women to be reading at all. And it certainly wasn't for the lower classes to be reading either, which I'll touch on when I get to the paragraph about the usefulness of the lower classes. Actually, to the point about the lower classes, here's the paragraph right here. The dangerous class, the social scum, that passively rotting mass thrown off by the lowest layers of old society, may, here and there, be swept into the movement by a proletarian revolution. Its condition of life, however, prepare it for more of the part of a bribed tool of reactionary intrigue. Oh. Really? Okay. So, that's classist as fuck. So you're saying that the lower classes can't actually participate in your oh-so-enlightened communism because they lack the capacity to mentally understand what it is you're doing. So maybe we can just use them as like the foot soldiers and the bribed thugs and not actually include them in the movement. And it's like, how about you go fuck yourself? Like, damn, dude. Really? I mean, for something that's supposed to be a classless movement, they sure do set up classes. But moving on to section 2, and this is really the meat of the manifesto. Like, section 1 is the one that's supposed to get you all riled up, and then sections 3 and 4 we'll talk about when we get there. But section 2, proletarians and communists, this is where we really start laying out exactly what the plan is. And first paragraph that I want to highlight in here, because, again, going back to that idea of a classless society versus what is actually being espoused in here. The communists, therefore, on the one hand, practically, the most advanced and resolute section of the working class parties of every country, that section which pushes forward all the others. On the other hand, theoretically, they have over the great mass of the proletariat the advantage of clearly understanding the line of march, the conditions, and the ultimate general results of the proletariat movement. Again, so you're espousing that there is going to be a class of people who are going to be the quote-unquote thought leaders, and that you're going to have to, like, push along the unwashed masses because you are so enlightened that you must tell these people what exactly it is that they're supposed to be doing and what they're supposed to be wanting. And I'm sorry, what? Like, it's dead ass saying that you think people can't think for themselves and that there needs to be a group of people that hand down from on high, like, okay, here's what you need to do, dumbasses. It's like, for people who advocate for a classless society, they sure damn well want to establish classes. And they want to establish it along the lines of who is the smart ones and who are the stupid ones. So, yeah, no. This is condescending as fuck. Anyway, moving on. Because now here is the part where we start getting honest. The distinguishing feature of communism is not the abolition of property generally, but the abolition of bourgeois property. But modern bourgeois private property is the final and most complete expression of the system of producing and appropriating products that is based on class antagonisms, on the exploitation of the many by the few. In this sense, the theory of the communists may be summed up in this single sentence, abolition of private property. There it is. That is the aim of communism, is the abolition of private property, which will be handed over to the state, which, again, I will wait until we get to that part, because Marx and Engels have a very specific definition of what the state would be. But this is why communism is the exact opposite of libertarianism. Libertarianism is about the defense of private property first and foremost, including your own person, your own body, and extending outward to your home, your property, everything like that. This communism is the exact opposite of that. It's saying that there is no such thing as private property. You don't own anything. And in practice, that means up to including your own body and your own person. So that's why this is such a trigger for libertarians. And this is why I don't know what the current socialist / communist think. But this is the fucking plan, as stated in the Communist Manifesto. So if you are not down with that, I don't know why you call yourself a communist or a socialist. I mean, it's straight up. So if you don't agree with that, then you need to come up with a new word to describe yourself, because you ain't it then, chief. I mean, it's so blatantly laid out. This isn't up for debate. Like, this is the plan. Abolition of private property. And anybody right now who is espousing socialism or communism and isn't willing to explicitly own that is either ignorant of what the ideology is or they're lying. And I can't quite decide which, but it's one of the two, which either way, I don't fucking trust you. And moreover, to that point of the abolition of private property, in bourgeois society, therefore, the past dominates the present. In communist society, the present dominates the past. In bourgeois society, capital is independent and has individuality, while the living person is dependent and has no individuality. And the abolition of this state of things is called by the bourgeoisie abolition of individuality and freedom. And rightly so. The abolition of bourgeois individuality, bourgeois independence, and bourgeois freedom is undoubtedly aimed at. By freedom, it is meant, under the present bourgeois conditions of production, free trade, free selling, and buying. So to my point of libertarians feeling that private property extends to your person, this is point blank saying, as far as I'm reading this, that communism extends to even your body Even your physical and mental being is not private property. It belongs to the state. You cannot do with yourself what you wish. You have to do what the state tells you to do because you don't own your own body. There's no self-ownership. Everything is owned by the state, even yourself. Like, think about that for a second. Think about how fucked up that is. That you don't even have the right to decide your own individuality. And you can't decide who you wish to interact with and who you wish to engage in voluntary trade with. You don't even have that. That's when I first started hearing stories about people coming out of Fidel's Cuba, and just the thing that really, really horrified me the most, I think, above all the other things, which, I mean, there's plenty of atrocities to talk about, it was this idea that you couldn't even have, like, your own thoughts. Like, you couldn't even express your own opinions. You couldn't have your own mind. Like, even that had to be controlled by the state. That just horrified me. I was just like, you just took away somebody's being. And it's one thing to deal with the bullshit that comes with, you know, food lines and shitty housing and just dealing with all that shit. But to not even be able to have ownership of your own person, like, that just... that cemented it for me. Like, that just horrified me. Like, I still, when I think about it, I'm just like, I can't imagine living like that. I can't imagine not being able to just speak your own mind and to have your own thoughts without being punished for it. And I mean, God help you if somebody found out that you had said something against the government, they just, like, bust in your house in the middle of the night and take you, and they ghost you, and nobody knows where the fuck you are. Like, nobody knows if you're alive, if you're dead. It's horrifying. It's absolutely fucking horrifying. Moving on, though, because that is a topic that will get me way, way too far into my feels. And also, we're getting to the topic that, because I am a woman, this is probably the most controversial part of this whole manifesto, mainly just based on that alone. I rarely ever pull the as a woman card, but let me go ahead and read the text, and then we'll talk about this. The bourgeois claptrap about the family and education, about the hallowed correlation of parent and child, becomes all the more disgusting, the more by the actions of modern industry. All family ties among the proletarians are torn asunder and the children transformed into simple articles of commerce and instruments of labor. But your communists would introduce community of women, screams the whole bourgeoisie in chorus. The bourgeoisie sees his wife as a mere instrument of production. He hears that the instruments of production are to be exploited in common and naturally can come to no other conclusion that the lot of being common to all will likewise fall to the women. He has not a suspicion that the real point aimed at is to do away with the status of women as mere instruments of production. For the rest, nothing is more ridiculous than the virtuous indignation of our bourgeois at the community of women which, they pretend, is to be openly and officially established by communists. The communists have no need to introduce community of women. It has existed almost from time immemorial. Our bourgeois, not content with having the wives and daughters of the proletariat at their disposal, not to speak of common prostitutes, take the greatest pleasure in seducing each other's wives. Bourgeoisie marriage is in reality a system of wives in common, and thus, at the most, what the communists might possibly be reproached with is that they desire to introduce, in substitution for a hypocritically concealed and openly legalized community of women. For the rest, it is self-evident that the abolition of the present system of production must bring with it the abolition of the community of women springing from that system, i.e. of prostitution, both public and private. Now, when they say community of women, they don't mean like how we would think, like a community of women. They mean like access to women's bodies. So, let's back up and think about this a little bit. So, Marx and Engels kind of just told on themselves a little bit, because that whole passage, you're portraying on to men that they feel that women are property, which back then, I mean, they were viewed as property in all fairness, but basically that men only viewed women through the lens of sexual objects, basically. And that owning a sex object, i.e. through marriage, was something that, it seems to me from my reading of this, that you're wanting to do away with marriage, with the idea that monogamy would be a thing. That just one man and one woman coming together, making a family, you know, getting married, doing all that would be something that was somewhat cast aside. And so basically, like, there's nothing in here about a woman's free will to choose to be with one man or whoever she wants to be with, first of all. Like, basically, there's no acknowledgement that perhaps these women want to be married, or even if you view this, and they're basically point blank saying that marriage is a form of prostitution, which, again, you're completely minimizing what marriage is and what a woman's role is in deciding that she wants to be married to someone. Like, you're basically saying that every woman that gets married is engaging in a form of prostitution to protect herself from what the fuck ever. I mean, oh my god. Yeah, and then this idea that the bourgeoisie are just fucking everybody. Like, they're just fucking everybody's wives. They're fucking these women. They're fucking those women. They're fucking prostitutes. Okay, dude. What? Wow. What parties are you going to? Especially given Marx's past of infidelity and fathering children out of wedlock and getting your rich friend to take the fall for you for doing that. It's a little rich. It's a little rich for me. But going back to, obviously, in this last point here of basically saying that under communism, prostitution would be abolished, both public and private, which means not only women who are prostitutes, but the idea of marriage, it seems. Now, something I've been thinking a lot about lately is I've been trying to read feminist content, and I've not been super successful at this because it all seems to be batshit crazy. But this one strain of thought I keep seeing is that men view women solely as sex objects, and that men only view women through the paradigm of basically just being for sex, and that's it. Like, just completely sexually objectifying women, that all men do this, they're all misogynists. And I was wondering, I'm like, where the fuck does this idea come from? And then I reread this section, and I was like, oh, shit. There it is. Like, I would be willing to say that there's probably, if you made a Venn diagram between rad femmes and Marxists, there would be a lot of overlap, and maybe this goes a long way to explaining that particular phenomena. I don't know. It's something that I want to spend more time thinking about, but that just struck me when I was rereading this section. I was like, okay, so maybe if you're viewing life through a Marxist paradigm and you're a woman, then you view men as some kind of oppressive force that just views you as a sex object. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, I gotta think about this one a little more, but that really, I was like, okay, maybe that's where this is coming from. I don't know. But moving forward from that, I want to move to the actual I mean, if you really had to condense this whole thing down, this would be the portion of really what could have been written down, and we could have skipped all this other bullshit. But I want to start with, the proletariat will use its political supremacy to wrest, by degrees, all capital from the bourgeoisie, to centralize all instruments of production in the hands of the state, i.e. of the proletariat organized as the ruling class, and to increase the total of productive forces as rapidly as possible. I point this out for two reasons. One, this is their definition of what the state will be, that there will be a ruling class chosen of who the fuck ever from the proletariat, and that they will be the ones to run everything. Everything will be handed over to the state. So, there will be a ruling class. This will not be a classless society. And I'll get back to that in a second. But I want to make it very clear that that is Marx and Engels' definition of what the state would be. That, yes, it would exist. And, yes, it would have utter and complete control over everything. Now, here are the 10 list of ideas, demands, I suppose. Anyway, here are the list of 10 things that are supposed to happen under communism. Number 1, abolition of property in land and application of all rents of land to public purposes. Basically, abolition of private property. Number 2, a heavy progressive or graduated income tax. Obviously. Number 3, abolition of all rights of inheritance. Well, I mean, if the state owns everything, what the fuck are you going to pass down to someone anyway? Number 4, confiscation of the property of all immigrants and rebels. Oh. Civil asset forfeiture on crack. All right. Number 5, centralization of the credit in the hands of the state by means of a national bank with state capital and an exclusive monopoly. Oh. So we're going to centralize all the money into a state bank, and the state bank will decide who gets what. This is all sounding very, very utopian and egalitarian, isn't it? Yes, yes, so very progressive. So very enlightened. Number 7. Extension of factories and instruments of production owned by the state, thus bringing into cultivation of wasteland and improvement of the soil generally in accordance with a common plan. All right, so you're going to make farmland. All right. Number 8, equal liability of all to labor. Establishment of industrial armies, especially for agriculture. Industrial armies, especially for agriculture. Where did I see that? Oh, Cambodia. Yeah. Yeah, it was Cambodia. That worked out real well there. Number 9. Combination of agriculture with manufacturing industries, gradual abolition of the distinction between town and country, by more equitable distribution of the population over the country. Oh, so you're going to force people to move to different places and maybe go do jobs that they're not really equipped to do, like farm the land? Which didn't work out so well, actually. Especially since in the Soviet Union they killed all the good farmers. I don't know. Because they were of the bourgeoisie class? Oops. Sorry about the famine, Ukraine. And then number 10. Free education for all children in public schools, abolition of children's factory labor in its present form, combination of education with industrial production, and etc., etc. Boy, that sounds familiar. I don't know. What country does that? Oh, yeah. All of us. Anyway, moving on. Because this is kind of the last central point I want to make about this. Because pretty much everything after this is whatever. If the proletariat, during its contest with the bourgeoisie, is compelled, by the force of its circumstances, to organize itself as a class, if, by means of revolution, it makes itself the ruling class, and, as such, sweeps away by force the old conditions of production, then it will, along with these conditions, have swept away the conditions for the existence of class antagonism and of classes generally, and will therefore have abolished its own supremacy as a class. I'm sorry. Did you just say that, by your definition, what would be the state will fucking abolish itself? Are you fucking kidding me? This is why communism and socialism is the biggest fucking lie. That will never happen. And I find it very hard that a grown-ass, apparently supposedly intelligent group of adults wrote that down, knowing that it was either A, a complete fucking fantasy, or B, a lie. And that is why communism and socialism came to be known as the big lie. I mean, that's never gonna happen. I mean, honestly, like, if you want to sit here and say that libertarianism and anarcho-capitalism is some childish bullshit, no, that is some childish bullshit. Thinking that you are going to create an entity and hand over control of everything to that entity, and then one day the entity is just going to say, like, oh, okay, you don't need me anymore, bye. No, are you fucking stupid? But I will say that because of that point, I will agree with everybody who has ever said real socialism has never been tried. No, it hasn't, and it never will. Because, again, that's fucking impossible. You're waiting for something to happen that will never fucking happen. So no, real socialism and real communism will never be tried. Because there is nowhere on this planet where the state will ever just dissolve itself at some point. Especially once they have control over everything. Like, how would that even work? Like, what? How? Like, even logistically, how would that work? Like, it's the dumbest fucking idea. And this is why. You're waiting for something that's never gonna happen. It's just, I can't. That's why, this is what I can't. This is why I can't even. With the whole concept of communism. It's based on a lie and a fucking fantasy. Oh my god. No, I can't with this. All right, moving on. Section 3, Socialist and Communist Literature. You can skip this because it's basically just an overblown reading list of other shit you can possibly read on various other forms of communism. And then Section 4 is Position of the Communist in Relation to Various Existing Opposition Parties, which, I mean, you can read it, but I mean, at this point, obviously, it's outdated because this was written back in 1837, if memory serves. So it kind of doesn't have any pertinence to much of anything. And that ends that. So, yeah. You can read it if you want, obviously. I mean, I think it is worth reading, especially if you are opposed to it, just so you know what the fucking arguments are. But here is kind of my bigger overviews about communism in general, and especially what is in the Communist Manifesto. My issue with communism and socialism is it trades in two of the worst, most base emotions in humans, and that is envy and greed. It's you looking at somebody else and saying, I want what you have. I feel like it is my prerogative to take it from you. And that's what it is. It's taking from somebody else. It's theft. It's no different than if somebody broke into my apartment and stole half my shit. Like, that would be theft. Like, if you came at me and you took half of the money that I make from me, that's fucking theft. And not to go on a rant on taxation, because that's not what we're talking about here, but it's just a very pernicious, very ugly ideology that certain people buy into, to my mind, out of, like I said, envy and greed and ultimately laziness, because it's the acknowledgement that you don't want to try to work and have your own things and to try to move yourself up. No, you want to take what somebody else has already made. You want to take someone else's money. You want to take somebody else's business. You want to take the things that somebody else built and appropriate them for yourself for no fucking reason other than you feel like you're entitled to it. Well, guess what? Ain't none of us entitled to shit. And that's the truth. I don't understand this entitlement nonsense. Like, I don't get the mentality behind people who buy into this shit. Like, it's like, what is wrong with you? Like, why are you like this? Go fix yourself. Like, what? How in the world do you, like, look at yourself? And you see this a lot now, especially with these young people who want to talk about, oh, I go to work and I work so hard, and then I my manager gets all this and the owners and blah, 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 blah. Like, first of all, you get a paycheck too, so shut the hell up. Second of all, the people that have more skin in the game, yeah, they deserve to earn more than you. They put their ass on the line. You fucking didn't. You just work there. You didn't start a business. You didn't build shit. You ain't entitled to shit. So, anyway, yes, this is my review on the Communist Manifesto. And as always, if you did make it this far, thank you for listening. And if you do like this, please rate, comment, and subscribe. You can find me on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, SoundCloud, Spotify, and YouTube. Take care, and until next time.